The ball is tipped, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star. One shining moment is all on the line. One shining moment.
What's up, college basketball fans? Welcome to episode 20. We made it 20 episodes of CBB 365. Today, joining us was Manhattan College head coach Steve Masiello. And Adam and I talk about the proposed tournament idea from the ACC and the potential moving of Feast Week tournaments this fall. All right, so today we are here with Manhattan head coach and 1998 national champion, Steve Masiello. Coach, thank you so much for joining us today. All right, so first question. As a player at Kentucky, you saw a ton of success, including two trips to the Final Four and a national championship. What did your playing days at UK teach you that helped you as a coach?
The expectation to win, regardless of who we're playing, when we're playing, where we're playing, what a situation or a game or any competition that I don't go into, where my expectations is to winning. Winning culture, being around. The things that go into winning behind the scenes that you see firsthand to really understand the sacrifice, hard work that it takes to have success at that level consistently. So those things became ingrained in me. I was very fortunate to be a part of some great teams, great coaches, and great players.
As a former walk-on yourself, is there a different level of understanding and respect coaching guys at Manhattan that might not have been highly recruited by larger programs?
Not necessarily. Basketball players are basketball players. When you step on the court, there's no label. There's no title. It's every man for himself. No one's looking at someone. And when you're in the heat of battle, you're not thinking what level is he recruited at, or is he a captain, or is he a starter, or is he a walk-on. You're playing to compete. I always have respect for anyone who has an edge or a chip on their shoulder or something to prove, but I believe that's at every level, not only the mid-major, but the high-major with guys who are trying to be pros or someone who wasn't a McDonald's All-American was trying to show he should be. So there's always underlying motivation, but when you step on the court, none of that matters.
So when it came time for you to start a post-playing career, what was it that made you know that coaching was going to be the path that you're going to pursue?
I went to Kentucky to learn coaching. That was the original plan. Coming out of high school, I really didn't have aspirations of playing in the NBA because I wasn't good enough. That's something that, the quicker you can own your strengths and weaknesses, the quicker you can prepare for your next chapter of your life. So at 17, 18, I wasn't delusional or didn't have any expectations of being an NBA player. For me, it was going there, almost doing an apprenticeship under Rick Pitino. Coach left for the Celtics. I got to learn under Coach Smith. And then for me, it was as soon as I got done with my career playing, it was time for me to take the next step in my future, and that was coaching, which was something I had a great passion for since I was about 12 years old.
So you mentioned Rick Pitino, and actually you coached with him at Louisville for – about six seasons, 2005 to 2011. What do you remember about how Rick Pitino offered you as a spot on the staff at Louisville, and how did Pitino help you personally as a coach?
Well, he had a big say and a big input in crafting or designing my career, in where I kind of the jobs I took to get to that level. It was a dream of mine from a young age to always work next to Rick Pitino. And he helped me choreograph the steps to get there, to learn the business from the ground up. And then in 2005, I got the opportunity of a lifetime when he offered me a position to come work for him. And I had I learned a ton being with him for 6 years that really had a large impact on my coaching career. And I'm very appreciative and thankful for that.
You built up a reputation as one of the nation's best recruiting assistants at Louisville.
How were you able to gain that reputation and have so much success bringing big names in?
Recruiting is a little overrated in the sense of where it's about getting players. You don't want to be known as a great recruiter. You want to be known as a guy that gets players. Recruiting allows you the opportunity or allows other people to come in and close the deal. You want to make sure when you step into the arena, you're locked in on a player. You're closing the deal. But Louisville provided me every opportunity and advantage as an assistant coach, working for Rick Pitino, tremendous facilities, tremendous history and tradition in the program. So it was a matter of just going out and doing the legwork and setting the table for a Hall of Fame coach to come in and close the deal on players that fit his vision and his style of play.
And what was the biggest transition from being a lead assistant at a big program like Louisville to the head coach at a mid-major such as Manhattan?
Well, when I came to Manhattan, prior to me coming there was only, I believe, 3 MAC championships won in the history of the program. And we were fortunate to win 2, and they hadn't, had a lot of success in recent years. So it's about getting everyone to buy in to the vision and the culture and understand really what goes into winning. Something that might be very important to someone who's won might not be important to the normal person or administrator or someone on campus. And you have to make sure you get them to understand why those things are important, why those things help move the needle, and why those things help create an environment of success. Then once you do that, you have to make sure that they're ready to do that consistently year in and year out. So it always lies the next hurdle or challenge. Once you get them to buy in, I have to get them to continue to do it and consistently do it year in and year out.
In 2014, it was looking like you were going to take over as the head coach at South Florida, but things backtracked after it was revealed that you hadn't completed your degree at Kentucky. How important was it to you to go back to school in 2014 and get your diploma?
I'm very thankful and appreciative, but of the way it came down was very unfortunate. It was a situation where I thought I had my degree and met my requirements and thought I had everything in place, and I didn't. And that came out years later. So it's something you learn from. You have to, it's one thing to make a mistake. It's but the key is, can you learn from it? Are you ready for it? Did you get better? Did you grow from it? And from that, I believe I have. But getting your degree is obviously a huge part of success at any level. And that's something that I'm very proud of. And I went back, I got it, I finished it. How to do it.
So you're from White Plains, and you spent time as an assistant at Manhattan earlier in your career. But what has it been like being the head coach for a school in a big city like New York?
There's a ton of upside to it, and there's also some challenges to it. Obviously, being in the greatest city in the world, New York City, where you have so much culture, tradition, history, always something to do. It's a melting pot. It's a destination that a lot of people outside New York would love to come to. It's also a place that a lot of New Yorkers would love to stay home and really, enjoy and embrace and take pride in being from New York and staying home. There are always challenges, though, because you're in a big market, so you have professional teams, you have other college teams, pro teams in many sports. So you have to create your niche. You have to try to maximize your exposure as best you can, even though sometimes you're going up against teams that you might not be able to, steal the shine from. You have to be creative in what you do and, take on that New York mentality.
And now that Coach Pitino has followed in your footsteps and joined the MAAC, what are you looking forward to most about coaching against him next season?
For me, it's another game on the schedule. It's obviously it's a big rival with Iona, but it only counts for one win and only counts for one loss. So you don't want to get too up or too down for anything. You want to take one game at a time and, put your work in, your preparation like you would any other game.
If most people were to name a team in the MAC, it would certainly be Iona, who have 12 conference championships and have frequented the tournament in recent years. What do you guys need to do to get back over that hump and take down the Ionas and the Siennas that have been so successful?
I think you talk about the MAC, you know, obviously the last six championships, the last six representatives that have played in the NCAA tournament has been four of Iona, two have been us. You just want to get back to playing that level of basketball and that brand of basketball. You know, we've been there, we've done it. We did it in 2014, we did it in 2015, and now we want to get back to doing that. And I think we, you know, have a roster in place that can help us do that.
With all the craziness going on in college sports right now and the uncertainty surrounding next season, what are you and your players trying to do to prepare for what could be a unique 2020-2021 campaign?
You have to stay true to what you do on a daily basis. Your mentality has to be, although there are a lot of circumstances outside of your control and a lot of factors outside of your control, you have to approach every day being the best you and having progress every day. And we want to prepare and move forward like the season's going to start on November 10th. And if it gets pushed back, we have to be ready for that challenge. And then if it gets pushed back again to, let's say, later, we have to be ready for that. And then if there's no fans, you know, so there's all these things that could happen. You can't worry about the what ifs. You got to control what you can control. Take ownership in the factors that you can have a positive outcome on and perform those to the best of your ability on a daily basis. If you just don't worry about things you can control, that's how you get distracted and you're not your best version of yourself.
All right, so that's all the questions we have for you, Coach. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. It means a lot.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so there's been a lot of fun news in the college basketball community as opposed to the past couple of weeks. The other day, the ACC proposed that every single team, all 352 Division I teams, will play in the NCAA tournament.
I mean, without having all 352 make it, that's already putting the regular season at just such, like, I don't know. Every game matters because, except I guess you could make an argument that non-conference play doesn't matter, which it really doesn't. But every game in conference play leads into the conference tournament. And conference tournament obviously plays a huge role. And whether or not, you know, if you're a mid-major, you make the tournament or not, or the deciding factor of where you're seated. If you're, if it's solidified in the tournament, you're more of a high major in a multi-bid league or conference. But with moving to the 352, that just completely does away with all of that and takes away all meaning of those 20 conference games.
The only thing that makes me not want to watch it is I personally don't want to watch, like, two of the worst teams in the country duke it out in the 130th seed versus the 140th seed. I know that's not how it's going
to work. 254 Arkansas Pine Bluff against 319 Furman for a trip to the terrific 256.
But here's the way I look at it, is we all say we wouldn't watch it, but it's not like we don't watch, you know, the 64 or, you know, the 16s versus the 16s in the first four on that first weekend or in that first games in Dayton. When you get a college basketball community to rally around this tournament, you know, there's going to be a community that's going to watch these games and everyone's going to be, you know, into it. And I think that'll, I guess, add to the anticipation is, you know, there's more around, you know, the larger, I guess, the smaller mid-major games than just, like you said, Arkansas Pine Bluff versus Furman. You know, you're going to have all sorts of people, you know, on a regular day, you're not going to get, you know, some of the best broadcasters or some of the best reporters to cover this game. But I think moving to this format, I just think it's premature to say that we wouldn't watch it. I just think that we would if that's what our college basketball is. Because, I mean, obviously, you know, what's our podcast? It's CBB 365. It's college
basketball. That's true. I'm not saying, like, I wouldn't watch any of the games. I'm just saying that, like, again, what were the seedings, Klein?
I don't know what I said. I don't think it actually would have been that, but.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just so many teams, and like, it's overkill. Like, I get expanding the tournament, like, so that smaller conferences can have multi bids, but like, every single Division I tournament, like, the team in the Division I tournament, like, that is a lot. And especially in a sport that virtually every Division I school has. It's not like golf or baseball or swimming or track and field.
There's also, I think, so much logistics to go and that'll go into it because
exactly.
I mean, we're still dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, and we see with the MLB, they're heading to the bubble format just for the postseason. And college basketball could do that. I think the most certain way to get a clean postseason with the least amount of tests possible. Positive test possible is going to a bubble, and going to a bubble with what is it? How many teams?
352 teams.
So unrealistic. You just can't do that. You can separate it into whatever, six different bubbles and have 50 different teams. Even that's unrealistic. You know, I mean, it would be all the logistics of it are going to be super hard to pan out. And who knows? Maybe we do have this thing under control by January and are able to go through with our second half of our season, you know, untouched and have a regular March Madness, hopefully ease back into getting fans in the stands. You know, we see it in the NFL. You know, they seem to be able to have some capacity. But I'm just saying that I think that eventually, we'll ease our way back. And then it just goes back to my point of a bubble is our only – unless we want to do a, you know, last man standing wins the NCAA March Madness and, you know, Austin Peay doesn't get any positive tests in the whole month of March and April and wins.
Look, I just want to say about the bubble thing in the postseason, the issue with doing that is then that you're going to end up with a college football situation where there are conferences that are like, oh – you're only doing a bubble in the postseason? Okay, we're out. We're not going to play a regular season at all. And then you have a situation where, sure, you have a postseason, but it doesn't have the Big Ten. So does that really count? The other thing I want to say about the Giant Tournament is that imagine being an Arkansas Pine Bluff graduate who now lives in Washington. When do you ever get to see Arkansas Pine Bluff on TV?
That's
literally never. Literally never. I thought Dan Wetzel of the Yahoo Sports College podcast, Dan Wetzel made a good point the other day that we already do all teams make the tournament. We already have that. That already happens. That happens every single year.
Very true. Conference tournaments.
Yep.
Right? There's a bracket, yeah. And the person who comes out of that mini bracket goes to a bigger bracket.
Yeah.
We already have every team. Every team has a chance to get to the round of 64 every single year.
I never really thought about it that way.
Of course you don't think about it that way because it's branded all this time as a conference tournament. But really,
yeah.
Every team, no matter how good they are, is in the conference tournament and they have a chance to get to the round of 64.
Yeah, it's more of a qualifier than it is a conference tournament.
So probably not a realistic option, but fun to talk about.
Yeah. Moving on, speaking of tournaments and stuff, there have been multiple discussions about the movement of where Feast Week tournaments are going to be played. It's like the Bad Boy Mowers Battle for Atlantis is going to actually be held in South Dakota, nowhere near Atlantis. It's sort of like the Heat's G League team being in
Sioux Falls?
Sioux Falls, yeah, the Sioux Falls Sky Force. And also, there was some discussion about Orlando's going to host these tournaments. They're going to host the Champions Classic, the Jimmy V Classic, the Wooden Legacy, preseason NIT, which will probably feature the schools like Penn State, Boston College, those type of schools, the Orlando Invitational, Charleston Classic, Myrtle Beach Invitational, and the Diamond Head Classic. And the Maui Invitational is either going to be held in Asheville, North Carolina, or where in Indiana? Just Indy?
Indianapolis. But talking about all those tournaments, it's interesting because it's not
a bubble. This Orlando is not a bubble. It's just holding the tournament in an alternate location, which I understand for Maui, and I understand for, I guess, Atlantis, because I guess you're traveling overseas.
Yeah.
Although I still don't understand, to be honest. I mean, if you're not going to a bubble, what do you get out of moving the tournaments? You know, I mean, you're playing, let's take the preseason NIT, for example. I believe it takes place in Madison Square Garden in New York City. What is moving it from New York City to Orlando gonna do in terms of coronavirus if you're not going to a bubble? I think you can stay isolated no matter where you are and do this bubble that you're talking about. You know what I mean? You're saying that they're doing it in New York because they're bubbled. Well, I think you can really be bubbled wherever. You can be bubbled in New York City. You can be bubbled in Charleston. You can be bubbled in Maui. All you're doing is going from the hotel to the bus to the court to play or practice. And you can do that anywhere.
I'm just glad they're trying to play. I'm just glad that this.
I mean,
all
I
but,
don't really.
This all but I, verifies the fact that we're going to see college basketball in November in some form.
Yeah, I don't really care how it's played. I just want it to be played. Like,
and
I really
way,
could.
Even if it's being played in South Dakota, Battle for Atlantis is a great field. Like, I'm looking forward to that tournament.
Yeah, it's always an awesome field. It's not going to change the field.
Well, it might.
Yeah,
obviously, Pac-12 teams are now out.
Yeah, that sucks.
I think Utah was originally in that.
All right.
Quick little note. Patrick accepted a stupid fantasy football trade today.
Fantasy football, who's 1-0?
I'm 1-0.
I'm 1-0.
I am not.
Patrick, 1-0. Whoa. Big thanks to Steve Masiello, head coach of Manhattan, for joining us on today's show. For Adam Hipsky, alongside Patrick Dallahan and my producer, Jake Klein, this is CBB365. Thank you for listening.